Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest tonight has probably the most difficult name for me to say yet, which is saying a lot, because I'm very bad at pronouncing things, as anyone who's listened to this podcast might notice. But I'm going to give it a try, and correct me when I invariably screw it up. Anze Tumich.
That was as close as we rehearsed.
All right, good. So tell the people about yourself.
Well, I'm a writer, a tech writer, actually, for a Slovene magazine. I'm from Slovenia, which kind of makes sense then. And then I'm also an online editor for another magazine, which is sort of a political and cultural magazine, like weekly. And then I'm also a podcaster. I run a whole podcast network here in Slovenia. And then I have an offshoot of that, which is like my English site, which is called stormingmortal.com, where some people have been guests on, including one called Scott McNulty.
Your best episode, I think.
That is true. That is true. Well, the stormingmortal.com episodes are kind of sporadic, but I do have an excuse because I've done like about like 90 interviews, but like most of them are in Slovene, so I don't put those up on the English site, which would be just nonsense for, you know, anybody that speaks English and wanted to listen. But yeah, I think there's about like 18 interviews on there, so.
And I have listened to not only my own, but several others, and they are all very interesting conversations. So check out Story Mortals. Now tell me a little bit about your Star Trek interest. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Yes, which is something I've came to realize in the last couple of years. I was always into Star Trek, but like now I've seen the original series about 4 times. And the last 2 times I went through the whole thing was, I think, like in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I think now I'm just officially a Trekkie or a Trekker or whatever you want to call it. So, yeah.
Whatever that we're called. I don't know.
Yeah, nobody really knows, but yeah.
So what made you go back and rewatch the original series fairly recently?
It's just I've been obsessed with old American TV lately. Mm-hmm. Because I've been watching The Twilight Zone, which, you know, which we talked about a little before on my show. But the thing is, I got introduced to Star Trek with The Next Generation. And I do love The Next Generation. But I think there's something about the original series, if you're not from America, that's sort of awesome in all of the good and bad ways that it can be awesome. Because, you know, there's an episode in there where they found another civilization where they basically have the Pledge of Allegiance or whatever the hell that's called, right?
Right.
Like, if you're not an American, that's the goodest kind of bad, right? That's just, it's as great as it gets, basically. And I have this weird fascination with it. But I will say that, like, the best episodes of the original series are, like, as good as anything on TV now. Like, there's glimpses of just awesome TV in there. You know, and that's, I don't know, I do love it. Well, not the 3rd season, we all know that.
But, well, know. It gets rough.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So would you say that the original series is then your favorite Star Trek series?
Yeah, see, I was thinking about that question. I think I'm going to say yes. Like, I've seen The Next Generation a couple of times, but honestly, yeah, I think the original series, that's my thing. I have no idea. Again, the first 2 seasons. Like, I just feel like I should qualify that.
I think that's understood generally.
Okay. Well, yeah.
It's the reverse of most Star Trek trajectories. The original series is the originator, obviously, and it is quite. I can understand. I mean, I am an American, obviously, so. But I can see in the next in the original series. Especially, you know, it captures a slice of American life from the 1960s, especially. So I think you add on the distance of time and then coming from a different culture, and it just becomes – it must be just a fascinating historical document in addition to just being a fun kind of show.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's why I love The Twilight Zone so much, because that sort of deals with, you know, actual Americana. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just find that stuff fascinating. And I had no idea, like, the writing was that good. Like, even, you know, the Harlan episodes, right, in Star Trek, mm-hmm. the Harlan Ellison episodes are just awesome. Like, that's actually good writing. I just, you know, I wasn't expecting that. Like, that was never, you know, seriously, honestly, because when you see American TV, like in the 80s and 90s, that was not happening.
It was a different time.
Yes, yes. The dark ages, I think.
Yes, yeah. That's true. We've emerged with good TV once again.
That is true. Like, the last 10 years have been very kind to American TV. So, that's
true. Well, except for the entrance of Star Trek series in that last 10 years, since it's only been, what, Enterprise?
Yes, which, you know, it's Enterprise.
Well, what can you do? It is still Star Trek, technically. So,
yeah. We're not going to go into the theme music again, right?
No. We've discussed that enough. And luckily, the random episode picker did not choose an Enterprise episode, so we don't even have to talk about Enterprise at all. We can just leave it at that.
That is true. I do want to mention one thing, though. Voyager, because I know you get surprised when people say that Voyager is their favorite show, right?
I do.
I loved Voyager when it was on, but I have no desire to watch it again.
Well, that's interesting. Why don't you have any desire to revisit this show that you loved?
Yeah, because I don't know. With the Next Generation and the original series, I sort of, there's always, like, there's certain episodes that kind of stick out in my mind, and I just want to go revisit them. I have a TNG episode, which is called The Royale, where they just get locked in a hotel, Data, Worf, and Riker.
Oh, sure.
Like, I've seen that episode, like, just on Netflix. I just queue it up and watch it every couple of months. I don't have any of the, like, that kind of episode for Voyager. And I know there are some, like, don't get me wrong. I don't know why that is, but yeah. And our, like, mutual appreciation of Harry Kim.
Yes.
Yes.
Probably. Oh, Harry Kim.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to mention that because,
well,
you know.
Yeah. I mean, this podcast has opened my eyes to the world of people who like Voyager. And in fact, not too many episodes ago, someone picked Enterprise as their favorite Star Trek series. So that was crazy. I almost just ended the podcast there. But they had their reasons. And so, like I said, I don't judge anyone's fandom, although I question it. But no judging. This is a judgment-free zone.
Yes. Just questioning. Science. Basically science.
Exactly.
This is a scientific podcast. Yeah.
I'm curious. I'm not saying they're wrong. I just want to understand how they got to that point. But speaking of the scientific journey, that is kind of an integral part of the episode that we, in fact, are going to discuss tonight, or today, depending on when you're listening to this. And that is The Next Generation, Season 6, Episode 20, The Chase, also known as the one that explains why all the aliens in Star Trek look like humans.
Yeah, it's sort of the midichlorian.
Exactly. It's the Phantom Menace of the Next Generation. It's not, I mean, I try to watch every episode at least twice before we get on to talk about it. And this episode, not that I hated it, but I could only get through 1.5 times because to me, and I don't know about you, but it's a little boring.
Well, yeah, I think the start sets it up to be boring because we're supposed to believe, I don't know, are we starting now? I don't know
how this works.
But, okay, so we're supposed to believe that Picard at some point in life wanted to be an archaeologist, right?
Yes. And so it's the episode starts with Captain Picard is in his ready room. Well, he was lured into his ready room by Riker. Well, not really lured, but requested his presence. And on the table is this ceramic thing, and he's very excited to see it. And from the shadows come his old archaeology professor, Dr. Galen, Richard Galen. And it seems as though Galen and Picard have had a good relationship, and Galen was sad when Picard decided in Starfleet Academy to become an officer as opposed to go off and become an archaeologist.
Yeah, and Picard, I should say Patrick Stewart, does not sell the enthusiasm for archaeology very well. That's my opinion.
I felt like he sold the enthusiasm for that statue. he was really interested in the statue.
that is true. As much as one can be when you just see this ceramic blob.
That's true. And, but it's like 12,000 years old or something like that.
Yeah. And it has, by a guy that nobody knows his name and, you know.
Yes, the master at some place. inside this big statue are lots of tiny statues that embody the fact that each individual is made up of multitudes. Which I think is kind of telegraphing the point of this episode, as we will find out later. And it's kind of a mirrored thing, right? Because as we find out, an alien race has seeded the galaxy with DNA, so that's why everybody looks the same. Spoiler alert. and also, Captain Picard has two interests, right? He wants to be the captain of the Enterprise and do what his career has done. But he also has this interest in archaeology, so he has more than one Captain Picard. And so that's, I mean, basically the point of the episode is that everyone contains multitudes.
There's like a lot of layers to that ceramic statue.
Like, that's right. like one of those Russian dolls with the other dolls inside of it.
I actually have some on my shelf here. So
see, there you go. And they probably sell Star Trek themed ones of those. So it's all making sense. Merchandising. and so Galen's like, hey, Captain Picard. Well, he doesn't call him Captain Picard. He calls him Mr. Picard. I am off on this grand adventure and I need your help. And you should come with me. And Captain Picard's like, well, what are you doing? And he says, I can't tell you unless you agree to leave the Enterprise and join me. And Captain Picard's like, well, let me think about it. And that's how it starts, with Captain Picard getting a visit from his old professor and thinking about a decision.
I don't know why it's called the chase.
All the races are chasing after this. Well, we'll get to it. I'll tell you why it's the chase. this is also, I felt like the pacing of this episode was really weird because the first half basically is dealing with Captain Picard and his relationship with Dr. Galen. And then Dr. Galen, halfway through, is murdered. and then it becomes this big chase. And so it's a very strange episode.
Yeah, I have a theory about that. I think this was meant to be a two-parter.
Oh.
Like, this had to be a two-parter. Like, it started out as a two-parter. Because the way that the professor gets killed happens in about 7 seconds.
It does.
Like, that just happens so fast, it's crazy.
Basically. I know, there's not much story to explain. Captain Picard says, okay, now I want to stay on the Enterprise because that's my career and I don't want to give it up and I can't just leave the Enterprise and come back. It's either I, you know, resign my commission and go with you or stay here in the Enterprise, and that's what I'm going to do. Dr. Galen is not happy, so he basically yells at Picard, storms off in his little shuttlecraft, goes wherever he's going. And then Picard and the Enterprise are going off to this conference that they're supposed to attend. They get a distress call from the shuttle, and they seem to be super close by.
Yeah, which I didn't get as well, yeah, because why are they still like 2 kilometers away? But apparently they are.
So. Yeah, they seem to – the timing also in this episode is weird. And so on the view, you know, Picard says, okay, let's take a look at what's happening. Oh, no, Professor Galen's shuttle is being attacked by a Uridian freight attack ship of some sort. Someone's going to correct me on the designation the of that ship.
Yeah.
They have boarded Galen's ship, and so Captain Picard says, you know, we'll have to help beam Galen aboard, but they can't, so Worf shoots one phaser beam at this giant ship, and it blows up, which they never explain.
Yeah, and when you see it, it looks like it's supposed to be a plot point, like, why did the ship explode? Something mysterious going on, but no, just nobody mentions it.
Exactly, because it's this giant, cool-looking ship. And they have one little – they just want to disable the tractor beam. So Worf shoots it. And it blows up. And Riker's like, what the hell, Worf? I told you to disable the tractor beam. And Worf's like, I don't know. It shouldn't have happened. And then that's never brought up again.
Yeah. I'm telling you, there's some missing scenes. Like, this was supposed to be a two-parter. That's my theory. I'm sticking with it. Yeah.
Maybe they made the right decision to make one boring episode instead of two boring episodes.
That is true.
So the ship is blown up. Galen gets transported directly to sickbay because he's taken a disruptor beam to the face. Maybe not the face, but a disruptor beam somewhere. Crusher says, oh, well, I can't do anything about him. He's going to die. Picard runs off to be with him. Galen dies, and in his last dying words, he basically apologizes to Picard for being too harsh. And now Dr. Galen is dead.
Yeah, and I think this is like 20, like it's not even 20 minutes, right, of the episode.
Nope, it's he's dead very quickly. He basically says, hey, I've got this mystery I want you to help me with, and then dies. And so, of course, Captain Picard, who has had a very deep, meaningful relationship with this man, is distraught. But he decides, all right, I'm going to figure out why these people were attacking this archaeologist, because it doesn't really make any sense. And let's pour over his records and see what was on there. Geordi and Data, I guess, recover the computers and find this weird code that no one can break. And so Captain Picard says, oh, well, let's see let's look at the black box of the shuttlecraft and figure out where he was and go to that planet. So they go to a planet, they start scanning it, and then all of a sudden there's some kind of weird plasma
something
in the atmosphere, yeah. And it's killing everything that's on the planet, although this planet is uninhabited, so nobody really knows why that's happening.
Yeah, but that's sort of, even if it's uninhabited, there's organic matter there.
Basically
all organic matter on that planet is getting destroyed.
That's right.
By a green thing.
Plasma-y thing. And there was a scene that I skipped over that I liked. So Captain Picard, they're trying to figure out what all these numbers mean, because there's like these sets of numbers on Galen's computer and no one can figure out what they mean. And Troy pops in to his ready room and says, hey, Captain Picard, how are you? And Captain Picard's like, I've been staring at these numbers for hours, hoping that the meaning would become clear, but it hasn't. And she says, well, I didn't really come in here to see how the progress was going. I wanted to see how you were. And then Captain Picard gets very angry and basically says, I will take the Enterprise where I want to take it, darn it. And this is not a wild goose chase. And because they're supposed to be at this diplomatic conference, but Captain Picard has blown it off to figure out what's happened with Galen.
Regrets it. Yeah, that's a good Picard moment there.
Yes, he's sorry that he snapped at her, but he's like, I have to figure out what's happening to my mentor. A nice little moment in an otherwise kind of dull episode. And so they arrive at the planet. The planet's atmosphere is destroyed. They are confused. But then they go. Beverly Crusher has been looking at the data, and she figures out.
The organic matter is the clue, right? I think Data says it. If we narrow the database to just look at the organic matter, maybe the computer will do it. And then just Picard says, I'll be at the lab, I don't think I've ever heard Picard say that on any other episode.
Well, he's very interested in this. We're finding out facets of his, although he has been interested in archaeology before.
That is true.
So he also likes lab work, apparently.
Yeah. And it's a pretty nice lab. Like, there's some nice digs there. That set was like pretty expensive, I think. Lab set.
They don't skimp on labs.
In Star Trek, that's true.
That's, the one thing they want to get right is the way the lab looks. They go to the lab. Dr. Crusher goes with him. And they figure out, these are fragments of DNA. And then Dr. Crusher, in like 2 seconds, figures out that all of these 19 different kinds of DNA from 19 different planets scattered across the quadrant share a similar, one bit of...
Yeah, a protein something, yes. I think. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, she figures this out in like literally 2 seconds.
Yeah, but the thing is, she doesn't know what it is. Like, she just figures out there's a commonality there. And it's what does it mean? I have no idea.
I don't know. But you would
cut
think...
Cut to Geordi.
You would think, though, here's my question. The Starfleet, unless Starfleet Medical is completely incompetent, you would imagine that they have DNA samples from lots and lots of different aliens. And someone, some researcher somewhere, must have run DNA against each other just to see if there are any similarities. But apparently never, except at this exact moment, has this ever happened.
Yeah, but they do sort of hedge their, cover their ass, basically, because they do say it's even, it does include non-Federation planets.
That's true.
So, you know, you could think that, you know, maybe they just scanned the Federation planet's people's DNA, right? So, and they don't have some of the other ones. So that's a half excuse, I guess.
I'll buy it. It's good enough for this half episode. and so, okay, they figure out there's a protein, but they don't really know what it means. And then Geordi pops in and he's like, oh, that's an algorithm. Which doesn't make any sense, but okay. And he's like, yeah, this is an algorithm. Someone programmed it 4 billion years ago to do something. But we don't know what. And everyone's like, okay, well, what does that mean? And then they do a little more extrapolating with their computers. And they figure out like a star chart, basically, based on the algorithms of the proteins or something.
Yeah, it's so convoluted. It's kind of... Yeah, but I do love the fact that when they figured it out, it's an algorithm embedded in like different kinds of DNA. There's this close-up shot of Picard just being all menacing. This might be the most profound discovery ever and the most dangerous.
That's right.
I love that scene. Like, that's Picard. Like, when there's a close-up on Picard and he's being all, you know, brooding and moody and stuff. And those are my favorite moments.
You know, TNG. You know that some acting is about to go down.
That is true, yeah. If he was a woman and in the original series, he'd be fuzzy.
That's true. They would have a super tight angle and they'd put the little Vaseline on the lens, which is always distracting, but they did it every time. So they figure out, based on this algorithm, oh, we need to go to another planet. So off they go to another planet. But oh no! Orbiting that planet, they're not alone, but there are two Cardassian ships, warships that are there, and Captain Picard hails the Cardassian, and what's her name? Some female Gull Oset says, "Hey, Captain Picard, clear out. This planet's ours." And Captain Picard's like, "We're just here for science, and we're not here to claim this planet, although Cardassia has no claim over this planet either." And the Gull says, "Well, that may be true, but by my count, there are two of us and one of you," which is a pretty good and accurate count.
Yeah, and it's kind of a badass line. And then she says, "Maybe I have miscounted" or something like that, which I like that.
I like that. She is a good Cardassian character, and I always like the Cardassians.
Same here, yeah.
They're kind of like Klingons without the honor.
Like that follows, and they're more logical. Then, like, everything makes more sense.
Exactly.
I think the Klingons are hampered by the honor.
They're more tacticians than Klingons are.
Yeah.
And they are, yes. Which, you know, she points out her tactical advantage, which soon goes away because, speaking of the Klingons, orbiting this planet is also a cloaked Klingon Vorcha class attacker ship, which decloaks. And says, who's on it? Nudok or some guy?
Yeah,
He hails them, and he's like, this planet is for the Klingon Empire, and we're here doing things. And so everybody's very confused, and it's a tense situation. And so Captain Picard says, all right, let's invite the Cardassian and the Klingon onto the Enterprise to defuse the situation, and I'll just tell them what we have, and maybe they'll give us some whatever they have. So it turns out that the Cardassians and the Klingons have also found similar information in their paleoarchaeology pursuits, and that they're all chasing. See, that's where the title comes from. They're all chasing the same thing, which is,
well, yeah, but it's not exactly the same thing. I do love the fact that like the thing they all, like, each race thinks that the algorithm is this one thing. They all think it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Klingons think it's a weapon, you know.
Yeah.
And then but none of them really know. But right, I did like the fact that it's sort of what they think they're looking for is kind of in tune with what, like, how they are, basically. So.
Exactly. It reflects what their hopes are, because they don't know. This is like the MacGuffin, right? The Alfred Hitchcock thing where, you know, there's some kind of unknowable object that all the characters are chasing after. None of them quite know why. They just know they want it.
Yeah.
And that's what we have here in the chase, is this ultimate MacGuffin that they're going throughout the quadrant looking for. And so Captain Picard is like, look, this is what we've got. And if you give us, we're missing a couple of samples, and maybe you guys have the ones we're missing. And if we pool our resources together, we will all find out the answer and we can, you know, share it. to which they all agree hesitantly, but they do. And so
I'm just waiting for the scene with Nodak and Data, which I have no idea why it's in the episode.
So then that's right. So there is an episode, not an episode, there's a scene. So they all agree to that. The Klingon's unhappy, the Cardassian's unhappy, everybody's unhappy, which means you've done the right kind of compromise when everyone's unhappy. and so Nodak thinks, okay, I'm going to get the inside scoop. So he goes to Lieutenant Commander Data and says, we've heard of your strength in the Klingon Empire. we could use a man like you in our ranks. And if you were to, you know, give us some information about what we're looking for, I'm sure that we could arrange for a very high-level position for you to open up in the Empire. So basically trying to bribe Data into giving him the inside scoop on what is happening with this chase that they're after. And which, you know, Data is like, I think you're attempting to bribe me. to which Nodak is like, no, not at all, and leaves.
Just the dumbest scene.
Nothing happens here. And that's why, I mean, I understand what you're thinking about having a two-part episode. This may have been originally a two-part episode, but it feels like they were even padding one episode with these kinds of scenes. So maybe that's what they realized. It would be great to have one episode set it up and then the other episode be the resolution, but they just didn't have enough story.
Yeah, but they're padding with stuff that they would have used in the two-parter, you know, but didn't have enough for one. That makes no sense. Forget it. Okay.
But I like
the
theory.
Had a thing there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's falling apart on me. But
well,
okay.
That's all right. Yeah. And so they LaForge discovers that
The Cardassians are messing with the defense systems,
yes,
right?
Yes, because the Cardassians are not trustworthy. But since there's a Cardassian on the Enterprise, she's fiddling with the defense systems to give herself a leg up. And LaForge tells Captain Picard this, and Captain Picard and the Klingon cook up a deal wherein they will make it look like both of their ships have been sabotaged and that they are not ready for an attack. But they, in fact, are ready. This is like the double agent kind of thing, or double blind or something, where she knows that their defenses are down, but they're not actually down. And it's all a grand plan. And so they basically decide, let's on our next meeting when we have the Cardassian, we'll tell her the next planet to go to, but we'll give her the wrong planet. And then us, the Klingon and the Federation, will go to the right planet. So they put this – they have their little meeting. They tell the Cardassian what planet they think is next. She says, thanks, suckers, beams to her her ship, attacks the Enterprise and the Klingon vessel. But they knew about it, so they take off like the inertial dampeners or something. And so no damage to the Enterprise, but it looks like there's been damage. And sadly, the Klingon captain hails his vessel and says, report. And they're like, oh, minor damage to our nacelle, our warp nacelle, but we'll be underway in an hour. And the Klingon is very angry. He's like, you idiots, I told you to be ready and you weren't ready, which means that he has to stay on the Enterprise.
Because but I did like that scene. Like, it's a, like, I don't know. I think that's almost good writing. Like, if you want him to stay on the Enterprise, I don't know. That actually made sense to me. I'm like, all right, fine. Like, I bought that completely. So,
yeah, I mean,
know.
It's an effective way to keep him on the Enterprise and make it less complicated to shoot because you just get rid of one ship and
basically,
one set. And you just keep the Klingon because you want the Klingon at the end, like the big reveal. because he's a good character. He's kind of, you know, your stereotypical Klingon guy. And so he's all about finding – he thinks this is a massive weapon that will let the Klingon Empire, you know, grind everyone under their heels, and he wants this weapon before anybody else will get it. And so keeping him on the bridge of the Enterprise is good. And so off they go to this planet where they are going to figure out what's happening. they transport down to this planet, and they are using a tricorder. Any episode that features a scene in which you're using a tricorder to scan lichen is probably not going to be a great episode, but that's what they do. And it's so they take some DNA, and then it's very strange. And then as they're scanning, Romulans beam down as well. And then the Cardassians catch up. The Romulans are like, haha, we have the catch on you. Everyone's arguing. Everyone has their phasers and disruptors pointed at each other.
Yeah, and then this is the stupid part.
Yes, surreptitiously, Captain Picard and Dr. Crusher are working with their tricorder, and they take a sample of the lichen that they were scanning, put it in like a test tube-y kind of thing, lay it on top of the tricorder.
Which is just ridiculous.
Then they scan it, which allows it to reconfigure the tricorder, which makes no sense.
Yeah, I guess the algorithm reconfigures it and turns it into like a small projector.
Exactly. Which is strange. And then the small projector is projecting an image of this kind of default-looking humanoid. It's the best way I can say it.
That's the perfect way. Like, that's the default alien.
Exactly. who then explains that they had a civilization billions of years ago, and they had space flight, but they were alone in the galaxy, and it made them very sad. So they decided to visit a bunch of different planets and plant the seeds of life as they went to see what would happen, basically, so that the galaxy would have lots of life. And they had hoped, they created this algorithm in the DNA with the hopes that all of these various alien races that grew up and that are their descendants, I suppose, would work together and figure out the mystery of their common lineage and get as a reward this projection of this default alien from 4 billion years ago explaining what happened, which I guess is interesting knowledge, but it's not really a super exciting end to this big chase that they're going on.
Yeah. And it's also it's just – here in this episode, we're going to explain why we just put makeup on human beings and they're aliens in the Star Trek universe. That's
true. So because one of the common complaints about Star Trek aliens is that they all look like humans with funny foreheads generally, or funny ears, right? And of course, the reason that is because we are humans, and so actors are humans, and it's cheaper for a budget just to put some prosthetic ears on somebody than certainly in the original series they couldn't do much more than that, and later series it's super expensive to do CGI for all these aliens. So I mean, Star Wars, it was easy. Star Wars has more varied aliens, I think, but they also for the movies, at least, you know, that's a movie, right? It's a set production, so they don't have to keep doing it, so you can spend a little more on your various aliens in a movie. But if you're doing a TV show week after week, you kind of need to control costs a little bit. So that's
why I never understood that criticism, sort of. And that's why this episode feels like the showrunners, you know, just saying, okay, we'll just explain it.
Fine. So,
you know, we have, yeah, fine. There's a reason why they're all basically humans with funny foreheads.
Are you happy?
And this is, basically the default alien.
That's right. The default alien, stock alien right out of the box before you customize it. This is what it is. Now, the interesting thing, and I thought it was kind of silly, but the aliens, so the Romulans and the Cardassians and the Klingons, all basically reject the idea that this is true. And they're like, I don't have anything in common with these other races, even though we look very much alike. And then everybody leaves in disgust. That's not the end. The end of the episode is Captain Picard is back on the Enterprise, and he gets a hail from the Romulan commander. Now, the Romulans and the Federation are often at war, but the captain and the Romulan commander have a nice little chat where the Romulan says basically, well, maybe we aren't all that different from one another, and maybe one day we will be friends. Captain Picard says, I hope that could be the case. And then that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's a nice scene. Like, it's a little bit too on the nose. Like, it could have just been an ordinary hail and sort of a couple of winks, you know. And maybe it would have been more poignant. But the Romulan commander basically spells it out. We're not so dissimilar, you and I, or whatever.
That's just kind of
we get it why you're calling. Just sort of be courteous, and we'll all get it. But it's all on the nose. But,
well, no, this is not a subtle episode.
No, by no means. But that's that Roddenberry moment, you know, of hope for the future and stuff. So I don't know. Exactly. I always love that. So that's Star Trek, basically, for me at least. So.
And that's the ending echoes the beginning, because much like the statue that has lots of different little aliens and little statues in it, the progenitors are the one source, and then they have lots of little alien races that they have sprinkled throughout the galaxy. And those are the Klingons and the humans and all that good stuff. And that brings the loop of the episode thematically together. And, you know, we all contain multitudes, and we all are multitudes. And hooray, kumbaya.
Yeah.
Everybody be cool to one another.
Yeah. You see, that ceramic statue had it all, man. That just had it all.
That's right. You could have just put the camera on that statue for 45 minutes, and I would have gotten the same lesson. Now, this episode was directed by Jonathan Frakes. Who, you know, TV's William Riker. and the story was Ronald D. Moore was credited with the story, not with the script. And I'm sure there's a difference in the TV land as to what the difference is. So I guess the story is the basic thrust of the idea. And then the script, someone actually writes the script. Those are interesting things. I mean, I like Ronald D. Moore. I think Jonathan Frakes is a fine director. And in fact, one of my favorite Star Trek movies, First Contact, was directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Yep.
So kudos
to
him.
I'll agree with you there. So, yeah.
I think that would be like my favorite movie would be, well, I have a soft spot for 4.
Why?
Well, it's funny. They're whales. How could you not?
Well, that is true. Yeah, okay.
Wrath of Khan clearly is the best original series movie. I would say First Contact is the best Next Generation movie.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna agree on both counts. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Wrath of Khan is better than First Contact, but First Contact is a fine movie.
True. I'm just gonna agree with you on that. Yeah, okay, yes, yes, I'm nodding. I'm
nodding. You disagree about Star Trek 4, apparently, but that's...
Well, no, it's just the Star Trek 4 is such a movie of its era, because they come back home and the whales and mm-hmm. stuff.
Well, it should be interesting to you, though, because it's a slice of American life again, right?
That is true. That is true.
A little slice of 80s San Francisco.
Yeah, but I was like born in the 80s, so we sort of got stuff by then. You know, it's different. Like, I'm more interested in the 60s and the 70s.
Ah, I gotcha. Yeah. Well, I can't help you with that. And so what did you think of this episode overall?
It's subpar, isn't it? Like, by TNG standards, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the weird thing. Well, not weird, but I obviously had seen this episode before, and I always thought it was a pretty good episode, in my memory at least. I was excited to watch it because I was like, oh, this is the one where we figure out that there's that one race that seeded the galaxy, and that's kind of a cool idea, and I seem to recall the episode being good. Having watched it 1.5 times recently, good is an overstatement.
I'll agree again. But the thing is, you see, I had the same thing. Like, I didn't, like, when I saw the beginning of it, I was like, which one? You know, I just couldn't, mm-hmm. like, it took me about half the episode to figure out that it's going to be the default alien episode, right? And I also have like a fond memory of that. But yeah, watching it now, I saw it, like I watched it about four times to prepare for the show. And
I apologize.
Yeah. I powered through. I just watched it like an hour ago. Because it's the evening here. Well, it's nighttime now. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. Yeah, it's not TNG at its best. Let's say that. Yeah.
No, and I think the problem is, as we discussed in your theory of the two-parter, it's kind of like two episodes in one. They couldn't decide, is this going to be like this grand, sweeping galactic chase with all these different aliens and who gets there first, kind of like, you know, one of those big chase movies with all the cameos by celebrities and everybody's running after the same wacky thing from the 70s. There are lots of movies from the 70s like that, many starring Burt Reynolds. Or is it going to be kind of like this intimate portrait of a man, Captain Picard, kind of looking back at his life and wondering about what could have been, and reconnecting with his professor and mentor and thinking about, you know, how he could have become this great archaeologist, and perhaps, and Dr. Galen says Captain Picard could have been the greatest archaeologist of their time, and you know, examining that and how, what choices led to his current career and where does his loyalty lie. But they get rid of that stuff very quickly, and then they jump into kind of this half-hearted chase thing, and so they end up with an episode that doesn't do either well, I think.
Yeah, that's where my two-parter theory comes in, because I think it could have been like a really slow-paced, like Picard intimate, that would be the first part, and then when it all came together, you know, that'd be a cliffhanger with the ship's meeting. That's sort of how I saw it. And then second part would be like the whole chase, and maybe the Romulans would be more involved, you know. And like the Klingon and Data scenes would make way more sense somehow.
Yeah, because there could have been a whole bunch of, like, they showed a little, obviously, the Cardassian sabotaging the Enterprise, and then the Klingon trying to bribe Data. So they tried to jam a lot of stuff into that second half of this one episode, but they just didn't have a lot of time to flesh out any of these ideas. And so it ends up being just unfulfilling.
Yeah. A lot of stuff happens too fast. Like, I do get you need to put everything into 40 minutes, but I think like TNG did a good job most of the time to just have when they needed to move the plot forward, those quick fixes were sort of few and far between, you know? And here it just seems like there's like 17 of those things. Like, the guy dies, there's the sabotaging the defensive systems, you know, there's all sorts of stuff just happens in about a scene that's 17 seconds long.
Yeah, and the big ship blows up with one shot, and we don't know why.
Yeah. It's like too many things happen way too fast. And then you just get sort of bored, I think.
Yeah, it just kind of fizzles out because you're like, everything's happening. It doesn't seem – there's no rhyme or reason really as to why these things are happening in quick succession. I'm sure they thought, well, it'll make it interesting and exciting. But for some reason, it just didn't gel. That, of course, that is not to say that this is the worst episode of The Next Generation I've ever seen.
No, that is true.
It certainly has its moments, and I really like the idea behind it. So this is one of those deadly, middling episodes of Star Trek that are so hard to talk about, just because there's nothing super wrong with them, but there's nothing really interesting about them either. It's
but you see, like, the Enterprise would, like, I would have loved to Enterprise have more episodes like this.
Well,
you know what I mean? Yeah, because it's just, I think this is just a testament to how better TNG can be. So because the idea, like you said, like the whole conceit, the idea is awesome, actually. But it's a poorly done episode by TNG standards. But if this was an Enterprise episode, I don't know, man.
Well, it would be pretty good. It would rank pretty high.
It'd be, not the best, but pretty close.
And the other thing, like this, so we find out this big bombshell that all these races are, all the races in the galaxy pretty much are from the same, share common ancestry. And then we never hear about it ever again in Star Trek. It's just kind of like, yep, that happened. Nobody cares. This is like a big deal.
Yeah. As far as canon goes, like, this is a big plot point for the whole franchise. And then, it just doesn't get mentioned. That's why I think this was just Yes, fine. This is why. This is that episode.
Stop sending the letters. Watch this episode.
Yeah.
All right. Well, unless you have anything else to say.
Thanks for having me. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being on. And maybe if you would be on again, maybe we'll get a better episode.
You know, it's Random Track is one of my favorite podcasts. So doing this is just awesome. I have my little Enterprise bottle opener in my hair. Just so you know, I prepared.
So, yeah. Well, good. That's why this episode has been so good, because you have the Enterprise bottle opener in your hand. Well, thank you for being on. Next on Random Track, The Next Generation's Inheritance.